Welcome to the new Cyber Frontier, bringing you the latest news on the local Colorado economy and initiatives that focus on the development of cybersecurity economics. You don't have to be a computer or cybersecurity expert to get plugged in. Your host, Chris Gorog, brings it straightforward, asks the tough questions, and brings the cyber world to a level of understanding for everyone. Chris is personable and opens up with our guests on issues we all would like to see addressed. You can find us on the web at www.newcyberfrontier.com. Now join our host as he introduces the topic for today's New Cyber Frontier.
Welcome back, everybody, to the New Cyber Frontier. My name is Sean Murray. I'll be the host for today's broadcast. I am welcoming a friend and colleague, Jim Wiggins, from the Federal IT Institute, otherwise known as FITSI. Welcome, Jim, and I appreciate you being on the show today.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks, Sean, for inviting me. Look forward to our discussions.
Well, great. You're in one of those unique areas, and you're out in the National Capital Region where there's so much going on. When we talk about cybersecurity and governance and the way that we do things, the government always seems to have a different flavor than the commercial side does. And what I'd like to do is have you introduce yourself as, who you are, what's your background, and what influenced you to create this organization that we call FITSI.
Absolutely. So I'm Jim Wiggins, and I am, I guess the best way to describe me is kind of a professional educator by trade. I grew up in IT space back in the 1990s. And got involved in a lot of training and certification programs. Some people may remember the Microsoft and the Novell certifications that were real popular back then. This is back when the dot-coms took off. I realized that pretty quickly I was training my replacements. when you think about it, was just, there was obviously a huge demand curve for IT professionals. And I was really kind of looking out around the spectrum of things and wanted to decide, figure out where do I go next? And it seemed to me that we were building all of these networks and all of these IT systems, but the thing we weren't really focused on was how were we trying to protect and defend them? And so probably about 17 years ago now, I guess in the early 2000s, I got heavily into security and really spent a lot of my time in the cyber education space. And of course, we didn't call it cyber back then. It was information assurance. It went by a bunch of other different names. But I did that for probably, maybe 7 or 8 years. And then about 10 years ago, just the constant ebb and flow of training all of these federal staff in all of these different certification programs out there, I just always felt there was this need for a role-based cybersecurity certification program focused at the federal workforce. And that really was the impetus for starting FITSI. So that's how, in a nutshell, how FITSI came to be. And from that, we've spawned a bunch of different initiatives, and maybe we can get into some of those as well. But that's, in a nutshell, that's my background. And so I've just been heavily into the IT / cyber certification space for the last, 22 years now.
Yeah, that's it's a great segue from, being in the technology space. At some point along your career, as I did, you realize that you have a passion for education. In when we talk about cyber and the different disciplines, there's so many different disciplines. We talk about, I make the analogy, it's kind of like being a physician. You go to med school for 8 years, and when you graduate, what do you want to be now? Do you want to be an oncologist, OBGYN? There's just so many different disciplines. So when you take a look at the academic side of cybersecurity and the training and the education aspect and the cyber awareness, it gets pretty complex. And so the unique niche that you have and that you bring to the ecosystem is, at some point we realized that there's so many of us that are working in the military side and the government side, the federal government side, and they've got their own standards. And you know, you go back to the old information assurance days, the old Rain Book series to, you know, now we're heavily involved in NIST. There's that piece, that niche that you found that provides a lot of capabilities for those of us who do a lot of work with the government. And your certification track and your education track aligns significantly to those of us that are dealing with those regulatory requirements, specifically focusing around NIST and some of the other standards. We're going to get into that when we come back. Right now we're going to break for our sponsor.
Cyber Resilience Institute helps build strong cyber communities designed to prevent members from attack. Like building a neighborhood watch, it takes coordination and a sharing community to protect our identities and valuables in the virtual world. Typically, we hear that organizations know they need to do something to protect their cyber assets, but don't know where to begin. Let Cyber Resilience Institute help your community create an action plan. Cyber Resilience Institute will build your community or business marketplace so that it is designed to support a collective cyber defense. Contact them for more information at cyberresilienceinstitute.org.
Welcome back to the New Cyber Frontier. I'm Sean Murray. Our special guest today is Jim Wiggins from FITSI, the Federal IT Security Institute. Welcome back, Jim. You know, we were talking about a unique niche. You know, we're both academics, and we both see the requirement for cybersecurity, information security training, certification, trying to keep up with all the changes that are ongoing. And you know, your organization is heavily involved with NIST. Some of the leadership within NIST. A lot of your curriculum is based on federal governance IT requirements, and you're constantly having to make those adjustments. How does your program differ from, say, other certification accreditation programs or commercial certification programs?
So the way I like to describe it is that the other certifications that are on the market provide a really great foundation for our particular workforce, for our particular constituency. And we find that our certification, which is the FITSP, or the Federal IT Security Professional, really dovetails nicely with a lot of the other certs that are in the market today. The unique aspect of ours is that it really takes what I'll call that foundational knowledge within cybersecurity that you have, you know, with all those other organizations, and it really extends it into that kind of unique domain that you made reference to earlier, which was the requirements that are imposed on the federal government. So, you know, when going back to what we were talking about earlier, when we started FITSI, there was a recognition that, you know, there's all these really great certifications on the market today, but a lot of them don't tailor themselves specifically to the needs of the federal workforce. And so when we set up the organization, we set up FITSI, we set up as a nonprofit, and we made the decision that we were going to do a role-based certification program. So rather than be, you know, a one-size-fits-all, we would actually have four distinct roles. We would have a role for managers, people that govern. We would have a role for designers, people that build, like architects. We would have a role for people that operate, specifically like, you know, your system administrators and system owners and things like that. And then lastly, we would have a role for those that conduct validations, reviews, what we call auditors. And so the idea there was is to really take all of the good work that comes out of NIST and build assessments around those four specific roles that would tailor themselves towards really probably 90, 95% of the whole federal workforce, whether they're contractors, whether they're military, whether they're actual civil servants, foreign service as well, obviously. And so that was really the unique proposition that FITSI brings to the table. We don't, I want to say, compete with those other certifications. We complement them. We just happen to have a very specific, unique niche in who we're trying to serve. And what we find is most of our certification holders, candidates, members, they come with all those other certifications. And what we do is we provide that entry into that unique discipline that is around the NIST guidance and also all of the OMB mandates and those types of things.
You know, so that's a great description of that uniqueness that your certification program and all those various certifications in those key areas, management, operator, engineers, administrators, specifically for how it aligns to the government side as it aligns with NIST. So let me turn it around now. How does the rest of the government see your certification program, and it's so much more than just the certification program. You actually get leaders within the government that contribute to the program, contribute to the body of knowledge. How has that evolved, and how is that viewed from the government side?
Great question. So this year, actually this month, is our 10-year anniversary for FITC, so it's actually kind of I enjoy that. It's a nice mark in our, a feather in our cap, I guess. But it's been a long road, right? So for the first couple of years, people looking at our organization, looking at our particular certification, and going, "What is this? What's the value of it again?" After 10 years of really trying to promote the program and to your point, make a lot of those particular relationships with industry leaders within the federal space, people like Dr. Leon Ross from NIST or Mrs. Donna Dotson from NIST, some former generals like General Gregory Tuhill. You know, we've really started to build kind of awareness of our program and the value proposition that we bring. So we've made those inroads into a lot of key cyber leaders within the federal space. From a networking perspective. And then the other thing that we've done, we've been able to do is we've been able to get federal agencies to start to buy into the program, right? We have actually several agencies like the Department of Homeland Security. We have the Department of State. They actually have our certification program on their, what they call their skills incentive programs or their cyber skills incentive programs. This is where they actually pay their staff additional monies for retention purposes to earn our certification. Now, we're not exclusive on that list, but it's a nice, again, feather in our cap that we're recognized by, two large federal agencies or departments that see the value in the program and will directly pay their staff to earn one of our credentials. And then in addition to that, we have participation from a whole bunch of other organization or federal agencies out there, NASA, USDA, USAID. So there's about a half a dozen or so agencies today that recognize the value proposition of what we're doing and actually send their staff to either take training and or pursue the actual certification.
And that brings a lot of value, not just to the professional, especially those of us that have been with the government for a long time. A lot of us, I mean, that's a culture thing. I know that I was one of the first recipients of the auditor. I want to say 2011. I've been certified for eight of those last 10 years, and I appreciate the value, and I saw the value of what that certification brought. And so, again, those of us who, longevity-wise, that has been our career cycle to be involved with the government, especially as FITC has grown over the years, one of the things that I can tell you I appreciate is the level of effort as a nonprofit that's dedicated to maintaining currency, validity, and accreditation for this isn't just something that's willy-nilly. There's a lot of thought that goes into it. There's a lot of contributions that come in from the outside. Can you talk about what that level of effort is? I mean, I've only touched a little bit on it, but the level of validity now that, you've been around at the 10-year mark, what's the level of scrutiny that goes into the validity of each one of these certification programs that would make it valuable to someone who is considering your programs?
Yeah, so that's another really good question. So we actually, several years ago, began the pursuit of an ANSI accreditation. So ANSI is the American National Standards Institute. And they actually have an accreditation for personal certification programs that's based upon an ISO standard, 17024. And so ISO has a standard out there, and in order to get the accreditation, you have to meet the rigors of that particular standard. And that standard deals with everything from a pretty robust and audited management system, and that deals with all your policies, and you've got to be able to demonstrate impartiality, and you know, a whole bunch of when you deal with candidates and so on and so forth. In addition to that, that process requires you to go through and have your assessments validated, and not just have somebody write a test, but have the tests actually what I'll call beta tested, where someone takes the test or a number of people take the test, and then they do a review of how the performance of each of the items are. And then you've got to be able to demonstrate that the exams themselves not only measure what you want them to measure, but that they actually, from a psychology perspective, are actually measuring psychometrically what the, you know, what the population, you know, in other words, so like if you have an item and let's say, you know, we have four possible choices, and 25% go with A, and 25% go with B, and 25% go with C, and 25% go with D. That's not a very good test item. So you have to go through this process where you actually have, you know, the test beta cycles where you go through and collect a whole bunch of the candidates, and they basically take the test, and then you have it reviewed, and then you have to go through and identify, you know, poorly performing items from an item is nothing more than a question with its answers. But the idea there is that you have to put a lot of rigor behind it. And then in addition to that, the exams themselves have to be based upon what's called a job task analysis, where you actually have to go out and you actually have to measure which particular tasks are most important and so on and so forth. So it sounds pretty complex, but there's just a lot of rigor that goes into it. So, and, you know, to be honest, any assessment that's worth its weight, whether it's, for example, the SAT or, you know, any of these industry assessments, go through these kind of processes. And so that's what we're doing right now from a rigorous perspective to make sure that the program itself, you know, maps to international standard. And so then the outcome of that is that getting the ANGI accreditation will then give us the ability to then go to like DOD, for instance, and ask DOD to be put on their, what we used to think of as 8570, now it's the 8140 directive or framework or whatever you want to call it now, so that, you know, we can open up that particular group of federal workers and government personnel to help them validate that they have the knowledge, skills, and abilities to be able to properly protect and defend federal, in this particular case, DOD-based information systems.
That's a great description of the complexity that goes behind, you know, these programs. We're going to continue our conversation right after these words from our sponsor. Security Services are your cybersecurity experts with decades of experience providing professional training services for our clients in various industries. We offer professional training and certification in areas of cybersecurity, safety, health, and environmental services at our academy. Our in-person and online training provides a collaborative environment where students can interact directly with instructors through live chats or in private classrooms. Visit MurraySecurityServices.com for more information. Welcome back. We have Jim Wiggins from the Federal IT Security Institute, otherwise known as FITSE. Jim's been talking about this program. They're just celebrating their 10-year anniversary. To be able to survive that long and to promote the level of quality in the program, you know, I've actually seen, and some of us have talked about it in the industry, you know, the organization is now, you know, doing different events. Can you talk about the conference that you know, you've had this year?
Yeah, so we run an annual conference in November, and our next one will be next November. But we've run it the last several years. And what we try to do is we bring together industry subject matter experts. We've had speakers from DHS that have come and talked about all aspects of, you know, from, for example, like the CDM program, the Continuous Diagnostics Mitigation Program. We've had the program manager from there. We've had people from the NKIT, from DHS. We've had authors from NIST, like Dr. Ron Ross has come in prior years, as well as Kelly Dempsey and some other authors to come talk about updates to core NIST documents. We've had generals like General Alexander, who used to run Cyber Command, come to one of our events a couple of years back and provide a keynote. So we do this annual conference, and so the next one will be next November. But basically what we do is that we try to, you know, bring together anywhere between 15 and 20 cybersecurity leaders and break them out into a bunch of different tracks. And for those that are members of FITC, it's a great way to, you know, obviously network and not only meet other members and other certification holders, but also meet industry leaders in that particular space.
That's awesome. You know, it just, it provides additional credibility, not just to the program, but to the industry overall. And again, the focusing on, you know, the government worker, that federal worker, whether they be a contractor, a government, a civilian, or maybe a military person, you know, the credibility that goes along with the program just is brings that much more value, especially as a FITC member. So let's talk about, you know, where do you see in the next 5 to 10 years, where do you see this going?
So right now we've got, I think we just hit our 2000th member, which was kind of a nice milestone. You know, so I want to see the organization ideally grow to maybe 5,000 or so members over the next, I don't know, 5 or so years. I think that the traction we're starting to see now with quote unquote government adoption of our certification program is really helping that quite a bit. As I mentioned, we're seeing quite a bit of interest from some departments like State Department and USAID and USAID and those types. And so I think the ANSI accreditation will only continue to validate, you know, how beneficial the program is, because now you've got independent stamp of approval from a standards body that basically says, hey, you do actually meet the ISO standard. That in and of itself will take us some time to finalize, but I expect with that getting wrapped up, hopefully within the next 6 months or so, that that'll then open up other options in terms of, you know, markets for going after other, you know, federal agencies, like I mentioned, the Department of Defense, which would be a good department to ultimately be able to get into. And so that'll hopefully help us continue to grow. The other thing we want to do, obviously, is we want to continue to grow the certification base. And so while we've been doing the lion's share of the training and the, you know, obviously the certification, we'll have a, you know, training partners that'll come on board, hopefully at that point, and start to help train the staff, or not, I'm sorry, help train candidates that want to pursue the actual certification. And so, you know, the idea there is to build kind of an ecosystem around, you know, high quality training providers that, you know, if you're, for example, not in the, I mean, our biggest limiting factor right now is we're predominantly in the Washington, D.C. area. And so it's tough for us to service, you know, Colorado or to, you know, Texas or other areas of the country. Now, having said that, 95% currently of all of our members are in the Washington, D.C. area. So that hasn't been that huge of an issue. But as we grow, we need to be able to be responsive to that. So we're looking right now at, you know, remote proctoring options where people can, you know, for example, take the exam without having to come to D.C. And then, like I mentioned before, having an authorized training center program where we can have high quality training organizations help out with facilitating training.
That'd be perfect. You know, that just aligns with a lot of the other professional, you know, training organizations that are out there, the other certification bodies. It's the same strategy that they use. And we're even starting to see more hybrid type courses where you can have a live class, say, in Virginia and have an online element as well. You know, what's interesting is, you know, both being academics, I do some training over in the European market, and I've actually had people ask me about the FTSE, the organization, and some of the certifications. And the reason why I'm hearing some of this is, you know, maintaining ISO standards is expensive for some organizations. And when you look at the 27001, the ISMS, the Information Security Management System, and then the controls out of 27002, they're not as comprehensive as NIST is. And NIST doesn't have a cost associated with the framework itself. It's freely available. And I'm starting to see clients and customers actually migrate to NIST because the tighter controls. Do you see FTSE having an international outreach at some point?
I think so. I mean, I think, you know, as you were kind of describing that, the thing that came to my mind was the NIST CSF, right, Cybersecurity Framework, which is kind of an alternative to those commercial sector companies that don't really want to have kind of a government-centric approach. You know, we've got the RMF and we've got now the CSF as well, too. And I know that NIST is putting a lot of resources into continuing to build out the CSF. We do actually, as part of our assessment, incorporate this CSF into our body of knowledge. So to your point, when you start to encompass things like 853, which is a pretty common control catalog, and then other special pubs like 800-39, which gets into kind of the enterprise risk management discipline that NIST likes to promote, there is a definite argument to be had that FTSE can actually facilitate organizations that want to have kind of more of a NIST-based approach for their cybersecurity defenses. And so absolutely, I think, we're not going to necessarily compete directly with you know, some of the organizations that do ISO training necessarily, but definitely if an organization is looking for a more cost-effective approach to, implementing their cybersecurity management systems, and I would look at, I guess my initial thought is look at the CSF in lieu of the 27001.
Yeah, and there's a good alignment to, it's the one of the focus things that I think FTSE does well is, you know, it's not just about 837, the RMF. It's not just about the 853, the controls. That's what most people look at when they look at, oh, RMF, it's 853, it's 837. It's 839, like you had mentioned, the risk management guide. It's 830, the relationship with the risk assessment guide. It's 855, your performance metrics. All of the documents are developed to coincide to mature your program. And one of the things that I find that FTSE does well is align the various NIST governance artifacts so that they're comprehensive. They're not as confusing when you're trying to figure them out. Do this in accordance with this. This is the passage. This is the artifact that aligns to that. So that's one of the things I think FTSE does well, and those that I others that I talk to, when it gets into those of us who've been around a really long time, and you start, mapping it back to FIPS and other standards, that's when sometimes we can get ahead of ourselves. But again, there's an alignment, and it makes sense. Let's talk you about your advisory board. So you have an advisory board. Can you talk a couple of minutes about that?
Well, we actually have several different groups. So we have, I think when we say advisor, I think you may be referring to like our STEAM committee. So we have actually a group of SMEs that kind of manage the certification itself. We call that the STEAM committee. We've got, I don't know, several different, we've got a STEAM committee, we've got a certification committee, we've got an audit committee. So the STEAM committee itself is the one that basically kind of oversees the certifications. This kind of goes back to that ISO standard that we were talking about previously, the 17024, and following, that particular standards process. But the idea there is that you've got to have a framework, if you will, for how you're going to go about assessing your certification candidates. And so the STEAM committee itself is made up of you know, kind of a cross section. I guess we've got, you know, six or eight members on it, and they come from different disciplines. And their primary job, like I mentioned, is just to really oversee the certification scheme and ensure that, you know, it's staying current, right? So we meet every year. We got to go through and make decisions to what you were just talking about earlier. You know, we actually formally publish our body of knowledge. It's free. It doesn't cost anything. You can download it and you can see how extensive it is. So that scheme committee is responsible for really overseeing that. They're the ones that set policy for the candidates. Like if you know you're going to have like a renewal policy or you know some kind of fee attached to it. That's what that certification. The scheme committee basically does. So their primary job is just to make sure that we stay current, you know, and so that we're not falling behind relative to keeping up with the standards. As you mentioned earlier, it's moving quick, right? I mean, if there's something new, it seems like every month that's coming out from, you know, some government, organization like OMB or NIST or DHS. And so the scheme committee just ensures that we stay current on all that stuff.
Well, you know, you've given a great overview about the FTSE organization, the contributions that you and that organization have been able to make to the industry, specifically to, you know, federal workers in this space, not just IT practitioners, but governance personnel, certification, accreditation. You know, there's a lot of validity in this. I really appreciate your contributions to the podcast today, Jim. You know, the new Cyber Frontier likes introducing those things and those people that are contributing to the ecosystem. You've done a great job. I'd like to come to the end of the show and say thank you very much for participating today on the new Cyber Frontier.
Thank you, Sean. I appreciate it. And if any of the listeners want to get some more information, please feel free to check out our website at www.fitsi.org. FITSI.org, you know, if you don't mind me giving a quick plug, but just want to make sure if somebody wants more info, they can certainly go out and check out the website and learn more about the certification program and what we're doing. So thanks again. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Jim. Have a great day.
We hope you've enjoyed this episode of New Cyber Frontier. Remember, please follow and participate as New Cyber Frontier is supporting a grassroots community effort to empower individual in the digital age. Check it out at privacyforthepeople.org. Also, make sure to join our mailing list so we can keep you informed. If you have an idea, if you have a question you would like to hear answered, or if you just want to get involved in what we're doing, reach out to us at newcyberfrontier.com. We also encourage you to visit our sponsors' links because they are the ones that really make this show possible. We look forward to seeing you on the next episode of New Cyber Frontier.